Hey, I'm David Benioff, one of the writers and executive producers of Game of Thrones.
And I am Dan Weiss. I do the same things that he does.
These opening shots, I can remember the day that Tim Van Patten, our director for this episode, came into the big meeting room with a series of storyboards that our storyboard genius, Will, had drawn up for him, basically showing the opening sequence. And he walked us through all these opening images, and when he was done, looked at us for a reaction, and there was just applause, basically. We loved it so much.
This ice was not actually there. This tunnel was cement, a cement tunnel dug into the side of a mountain.
So when we originally shot the pilot, we had done many things differently, and one of the things we realized with the original pilot was that people kept referring to the wall, but we'd never seen the wall. And it was confusing because you hear wall and you just think it's a normal old wall. And of course, the wall here is nothing like a normal wall. So we went to show it in the opening seconds of the series, and here it is.
Yeah, I think the guys at Blue Bolt did a really nice job with this.
A really beautiful, arresting image. There's a bit of a continuity error coming up here. Did you catch it the first time around? I bet you didn't. Here
nope.
It comes.
Maybe
here
on comes. Blu-ray. Maybe if you're a Blu-ray purchaser, you caught it.
So Bronson Webb, who plays Will, supposed to be this kid right here. That's not Bronson.
Somebody completely different.
This whole thing.
Not as big as the continuity error we had in the show for about 30 iterations, which was the horse changing color from black to white, which nobody noticed after seeing it 30 times. And finally, Mark Huffman, our producer, said, "Did you guys notice the horse?"
That previous shot of the horse walking through the trees, the wide shot, was one of my favorites of the whole series. Alex Sakharov was the DP on this and just did a magnificent job. As Dan alluded to before, all of this snow, all the ice, obviously, was created for the show. Here in Northern Ireland, it gets quite cold, and every now and then you get snow, but not when you want it, and certainly not in August when we're shooting this, or September.
It feels cold, though, when you're in. It's amazing the psychological effect that being surrounded by ankle-deep snow has on you, even when it's 60 degrees.
The first time we shot the pilot, we just saw some bodies lying there, kind of, it was very bloodless. It was just bodies lying heaped up, covered in clothes, didn't really look too violent, and it didn't have the kind of visceral effect we wanted it to. It wasn't horrific enough. So we decided to get a lot more horrific.
Funny thing about this, I've heard lots of people comment and say that they didn't think this girl looked real and they thought that she was a doll. That's a real girl.
Yeah, she's actually up there on the tree, and we have the dailies where she's being taken down from the tree. That's not a dummy, that's not a mannequin.
Even more shocking, she is 19 years old.
Yeah.
One lot steals a goat from another lot before you know it, they're ripping each other to pieces.
I've never seen wildlings do a thing like this. I never seen a thing like this, not ever in my life.
How close did you get?
Close as any man would.
We should head back to the wall.
Of all the costumes, all these costumes created by Michelle Clapton, our costumer extraordinaire, and who has the gift of creating these looks for all the various peoples in the various worlds of Game of Thrones, which all look completely natural and organic to those worlds, to those environments, and look very lived in. All these clothes were designed for the show, were made new.
Whatever did it to them could do it to us.
But part of the process that Michelle goes through is making the clothes, and then the second part of the process is destroying them and making them look like they've been lived in.
You want to run away south, run away. Of course, they will behead you as a deserter.
Michelle came in, even from the very first meeting we had with her, with just a very, very evolved conception of the differences between regions and the different fabrics and materials and looks that would be appropriate to each region according to what kind of people they were and how they made their living, and kind of came into the world very fully formed. Rob Ostler.
They were here.
Rob, who's playing Sir Waymar, came in to read for several different parts. Was actually one of our favorites for Viserys, came very close to getting the role of Viserys. He is a brilliant actor who could have played four different parts in this show. When we came back to reshoot the pilot, we really wanted him for Waymar. He's able to kind of embody the entitlement that this character has, his arrogance, mm-hmm. and at the same time doesn't push him too far that he starts becoming a cartoon. And then Bronson Webb, who returns from the original version of the pilot, is just a fine, natural actor.
This whole sequence in here was one, we were talking about storyboards earlier, was one that we had talked through with Tim, and we had kind of a notion of what was going to happen, but then Tim called us all into the meeting room, and Will had storyboarded the whole thing with him. And just from beginning to end, this whole sequence was a really remarkable set of storyboards that he talked us through, and at the end of the whole presentation, got a standing ovation for his storyboards. Dead girl.
I was in Malta with our other unit while you guys were shooting this, so yes. I would just get home at night and look at the dailies and think, wow, that looks really creepy.
These suits, the White Walker suits, were designed by Connor O'Sullivan, our prosthetics specialist, and they were excellent, grim-looking creations. The only problem with them is they afforded very little visibility, and these guys had to be running as hard as they could through the woods with effectively no visibility, and it was actually relatively dangerous.
Yeah, we call them White Walkers in the show, more often known as the Others in the books, and the reason for the change was simply that people would refer to the Others, and viewers who didn't know the books would think, which Others are we talking
the
about?
The Other Ones.
This title sequence coming up here was designed by Angus Wall and his team at A52 and Elastic. And one of the joys of collaboration is that you write something in a script that's very vague. Basically, we just had the notion of a raven flying over a map to be the title sequence. And Angus took the concept of a map and made it something far more extraordinary. And it was really just a matter of us sitting back. I think the only thing you can really give us credit for in this sequence is that we fought for it, you know, that people weren't sure if this was going to work. And really fought to defend Angus's vision. But this is all those guys, and they did a phenomenal job. I mean, I can't think of a better title sequence or one that's a better introduction for our series.
In addition to just being a gorgeous little miniature work of art, in its own right, it serves a function at the top of each hour, reorienting you geographically in this world and letting you know where the wall is relative to Winterfell, relative to King's Landing, and the story is sprawling and it takes place over many, many different kingdoms and kinds of geographies. And I think that for people, especially people who weren't familiar with the book, seeing this at the top of every hour really helped to just kind of situate them in the world and know when we went to see Daenerys and Viserys that we were far, far away from the events that were happening in the other parts of the world.
It really showcases Ramin Djawadi's score. Ramin came in fairly late in the day, and we were kind of entering panic mode. There's very little time left. We needed to get someone. Our music supervisor, Evian Kleen, was talking to us about who we could bring on, and we said, Evian, just top of your head, don't even think about it, just tell us the first name that comes to your mind when you think about the show. And he said, Ramin Djawadi. And we called him up. He was available. He came in to meet with us. 2 days later, he was hired. 3 days later, he said, guys, I can't do it because I'm working in this other movie. And we begged and begged and pleaded and thanked the gods that Ramin stayed with us.
One of our favorite shots here.
Yeah, another Alex Sakharov shot. Just, you know, Alec and Tim work so well together as a team. And that shot to me is like Kurosawa.
Yeah.
So here with Winterfell, we want to have a slightly different introduction to the Stark family than in the books. Again, this is something that came out of the original version of the pilot, which left many viewers completely confused as to who was who, and as a result, somewhat diminished the execution scene that follows. So here's an introduction to the Stark boys, and Jon Snow, of course, the bastard son.
And also we wanted to introduce a little bit of lightness into their world. Relatively quickly, things get very grim, and they stay very grim for quite a while for the Starks, and we wanted to establish that they were a happy family and a relatively normal family in the context of this world, and we thought it would just be a chance to maybe let them breathe.
Eyes right there. And the shot here where she looks back at the camera is phenomenal. But also just a good place to give a shout out to Gemma Jackson, our production designer extraordinaire, who built this Winterfell courtyard in a parking lot here in Northern Ireland. You see it when it's been stripped, and it's really a parking lot with a gift shop. And this is where Winterfell's central courtyard was built. And it's a phenomenal space because you can shoot, you know, 360 degrees. You look one way, you see that archery range. You look another way, there's a blacksmith. You know, the gates of Winterfell, but you can turn all different angles, and much like Castle Black, which affords you a lot of creative freedom.
Wonderful kind of immersive environments that gave the director so much freedom to explore the spaces.
Snowed in from the hills. I've captured a deserter from the Night's Watch.
Get the lads to saddle their horses.
Sean Bean, when Dan and I first read the book, the first book in the series, we only had two actors in mind for the characters. It's a huge cast, obviously, but there were two actors that we knew we wanted as our first choice. It's Sean Bean for Ned Stark and Peter Dinklage for Tyrion Lannister. And somehow we got incredibly lucky and got both, and it's hard now to conceive of the show without those two.
Here we get the darker side of Catelyn Stark, so perfectly portrayed by Michelle Fairley.
It's one of the great things about Michelle as an actress is that she's able to convey, you know, in the same episode, this great warmth and affection, you know, for instance, when she's brushing her daughter's hair, Sansa's hair, before the feast, and loathing, as when she's looking down there at Jon Snow, the bastard son, who is a walking, talking reminder of her husband's infidelity many years before.
This was initially the first time we met the Stark family in initial pilot and in the books as well.
No, I broke my oath.
Just one of those beautiful Northern Irish locations. People ask us a lot why we shoot here, and a big part of the reason is that there are so many beautiful spots like this, which are within an hour's drive of Belfast, so it makes our quite complicated schedule somewhat doable because we're able to go from a seaside, say, to these windy cliffs, to deep forest, and back to our paint hall, which is where most of the sets are built.
Sorry.
Ned draws ice from a wolf scabbard there. All these weapons were designed by Tommy Dunn, our armor.
In the name of
probably the meetings that I look forward to most are ones with Tommy, because he always comes in with new swords and daggers and maces and axes, and it's kind of like a, for kids who grew up playing Dungeons and Dragons, it's early Christmas.
The House Stark.
It's a gorgeous sword he's made here. He knew it was going to be
sentence you to die.
Kind of the centerpiece weapon of the season.
Looking at Isaac there, I mean, that reaction when they're in these coming shots, Isaac is, you know, for a kid his age, all these Stark kids had to do so much, unlike kids in the regular Hollywood series where they just have to be cute and kind of, you know, utter a couple of funny lines every now and then. These kids have to actually take part in some deeply traumatic scenes. And they have major roles. They're not there as wallpaper. I mean, they've got huge roles in the series. And each of those roles, Bran, Sansa, Arya, are crucial to the success of the series. So we were really nervous about it going in. Can we find three kids that good? And we had the very good fortune of being paired with Nina Gold as our casting director, who's able to find these talented kids. God knows where she finds them all.
She's got a real sense for who has the natural ability to shed their skin and put on someone else's. I mean, none of these kids had done anything before. Maybe a TV commercial here and there, but Isaac is just such a natural, as I think this scene makes really, really clear.
The madman sees what
he knows not to do too much, and he knows not to mug. Everything he does, I think, is pretty much perfect.
Yeah, they're all three incredibly gifted, and they're all just great kids too, which is lucky for us, and they have great mothers, so we're not saddled with a bunch of spoiled Hollywood kids and their stage mothers. It makes everything much happier.
Everybody likes everybody too, which is nice. This was great. Kenny, our animal handler / butcher, when he had to be actually gutted this stag, which had been shot, not by us, Humane Society, but which we'd bought and had been sitting there for 2 days and was not in great shape. And when he opened that animal up, it was a sight to see. Not so much the animal as the effect it had on everyone in the crew.
Did Props Brian vomit?
Props Brian, who is not a squeamish man, could not keep his lunch in his stomach.
He couldn't keep his haggis in his stomach.
Scottish. It's an inside joke with Brian.
These pups are Northern Inuits, dogs that are bred to look as much like wolves as possible.
It's a freak.
Should we point out a continuity here?
Is it raining on one side, not the other?
There's the raining, and there's also the fact that I believe the pups are different animals in some angles, which I didn't notice until someone pointed
they're
it out
moles
to me.
At certain angles.
There are no direwolves.
It is raining on Richard.
Another five.
We shot the scene twice for the two different versions of the pilot, and both times it was a bitch to shoot.
Yeah, this location is not easy for whatever reason.
Where will they go?
Even on this time, we had to split it over 2 days shooting because I believe the weather both times cut our days short.
No!
Put away your blade.
Take orders from your father, not you.
Please, father.
I'm sorry, Brad.
Lord Stark. There are five pups.
Of course, a famous scene from the books, and I can remember reading the first book. I was about 500 pages into A Game of Thrones, and I called up Dan. We've been friends for about 15 years, and I said, you have to read this book, Game of Thrones. Have you heard of it? And I don't know if you had heard of it at that point
or not. No, I had
not. And I said, maybe I've completely lost my mind, but I think it's the most fun I've had reading anything. And
I just remember seeing all of them in your house.
Yeah.
Like they were just this stack of like 5,000 pages, and I was like, what the hell what is this? You're never gonna read these. Why do you even have these?
Yeah, and I started reading, and I got to the scene, which is now the last scene of the pilot. And after that scene, I thought, well, I'm going to have to finish this book. And then kept going, and at a certain point thought, well, I'm going to have to work on this if there's any possible way of making that happen. And at that point, no one had the rights. George had had many offers before from movie studios and so forth and had kept holding on to them. And, you know, George has worked in TV for a long time, worked on Beauty and the Beast for, I think, 10 years or something, worked in Hollywood for 10 years and knew the ropes. And he knew the longer he held on to the books and the more successful they became, the more leverage he would have in an eventual deal. And so he was very wise to retain control.
Our first sight of the Iron Throne, which is something we all spent a lot of time on, mostly Gavin Jones, the man who actually built it. Spent a lot of time getting it right, and he did an absolutely fabulous job, I think.
Yeah, it's a beautiful throne.
Gemma's idea to put the painted rocks on the eyes, I like that.
And the organs here, floating in.
Yeah.
Saline or whatever it is.
It's Egyptian style.
Those are the Silent Sisters, and Michelle took the basic descriptions from the book and then went further just to make them even stranger.
Yeah.
And as usual, I think it's very successful.
Like the nuns of this world, except they don't speak.
Your brother, I feel it's my duty to warn you. You worry too much. It's starting to show.
And you never worry about anything. When we were seven, you jumped off the cliffs at Castle Rock. 100-foot drop into the water. You were never afraid.
Two more parts that were very, very difficult to cast. You're looking for two blondes or two people who can be convincingly blonde. Twins, fraternal twins, obviously. Both of them are supposed to be beautiful and intelligent and central characters in our storyline. So we needed great actors, and it wasn't easy. Sometimes you'd find someone who was beautiful but not a great actor. Sometimes you'd find someone who was a great actor but not beautiful. And
very hard to find both.
Eventually, we found Lena and Nikolai.
Yes.
Fucking bulls and hunting whores. Or is it the other way around? And life will go on.
You should be the hand of the king.
That's a none I could do without. The days are too long, the lives are too short.
That's John Aaron lying dead there. In the book, he doesn't actually appear, and we hear of him. But in the book, of course, you know, George is able to explain who someone is through the character's thoughts, and we didn't have that luxury here. So we really wanted to see John Aaron's face, even his dead face, just to give the audience some understanding that this is a man who's passed away and his death is going to have major repercussions, because John Aaron's death does trigger so much of what follows.
I mean, it's really the spine of the whole first season, really, is sort of a murder mystery. And we decided that if you were going to have a murder mystery, you needed to see the body.
That black pool was filled with black paint to make it reflective. So otherwise, that water just wasn't reflecting.
You're killing the magic. Don't kill the magic.
You're not an outsider.
It's not black paint, it's magic.
Black magic, I apologize. The Godswood is obviously in a crucial location in the books and kind of a mystical location, because it's this little oasis of greenery and color within Winterfell, which is normally a fairly barren, gray place. And we wanted the location in the series to mirror that, and so we spent a lot of time looking for the right place, and then Gemma Jackson and her team spent a lot of time making it look just right.
I thought Alec also did a really, really nice job shooting this location, just heightening it a bit and bringing out the rays coming through the trees and just making it seem like it wasn't quite of this world without it seeming to fairyland.
I remember when Michelle first showed us the designs for Michelle Fairley's costume, I thought the fur-lined sleeves would be too distracting because they're so big. I couldn't imagine that Michelle Fairley would be able to act at all in them. And in the end, you know, Michelle Clapton kind of stuck by her guns, and I'm glad she did, because I really loved that outfit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she looks great there.
You can always say no, Ned.
Tiny little continuity error in the back there. You see a guy with a red robe. Somehow, a Lannister spy has snuck into Winterfell. I don't know what he's doing there.
He's staying in the background, as he should, evading detection.
Possibly drink a man of his stature.
We brought up 8 barrels of ale from
Donald Sumter is Maester Luwin, a great, great actor who took a part that very easily could have been forgettable and made it into something much more.
The fact that these guys are able to act while flexing their abs so severely is really impressive.
You had seen the number of crunches that they did before they shot this. I'm surprised they didn't all throw up.
They're not actually breathing during this entire scene. They're just flexing, and yet somehow it works.
Yeah, it must have been painful. Push-ups.
One of the things about Isaac, you know, for the character of Bran, is really important is he's just got to look good moving, too, because sadly he won't be moving much for the rest of the series. And it's important that you know how much of a sacrifice that was for this kid. This is a kid who loves climbing, who loves running around. He's always outside, always scampering this way and that. And when the events happen at the end of this episode, I assume anyone listening to this already knows what happens, it's that much more tragic. It would be tragic, obviously, for any kid, but for a kid who's always on the move, always running around, and is just such a graceful little athlete to lose his legs.
I feel like in the earliest drafts of the scripts, we didn't have that much climbing on his part, and we put it in later because we felt like we really needed to see him in action.
I want you to promise me no more climbing.
Donald Sumter is one of those actors who, you know, in the first few scripts came out, he didn't have that many lines. Lewin's a great character, but he's doesn't have a huge amount of screen time, and the more we saw of him, he's just always so good that we wanted him to have more opportunities. There's a scene later in the season between him and Bran, just the two of them talking after Bran's lost the use of his legs and his mother's gone. It was really written purely to showcase those two great actors and their relationship and to learn more about these characters.
This bit here, I believe, was Tim's idea.
Yeah, we had very different King's Arrival where he only came in the courtyard, and Tim correctly argued that it wasn't nearly dramatic enough, so he came up with this idea.
Bringing Arya out there and seeing it through her eyes, and I think it was a really excellent idea.
Very stirring music from Ramin Djawadi, our first sight of Prince Joffrey and the Hound. Mm. And Arya, she lives for this stuff. You know, her sister is excited because the prince is coming up and the prince is a possible romantic interest. Arya is just so excited to see all these knights and to see these legendary killers like the Hound.
Yeah. She loves the murderers.
We just like the idea of seeing her wearing the helmet because it's who she is. She doesn't want to be knitting. She doesn't want to be doing any of the stuff associated with girls in this world. She wants to be one of the boys. She wants to be a warrior.
Glad we put Hodor in this scene.
Hodor with his beard. Later in the season, we lost the beard.
Yeah, he looked a little bit too much like the world's biggest classics professor with that beard.
And Richard Madden's jealous look here as Rob is the older brother, Rob Stark. Seeing this little punk staring at his sister is classic. Nice. Believe that wagon, the Queen's wheelhouse is much bigger in the books. We couldn't afford to build the massive three-story version of it.
It wouldn't have fit through the gate.
Even this one did not. In fact, at one point, there was a collision, smacked into something.
We knocked one of the doors off, and they had to take the door off one side and put it on the other side. And there goes an hour.
Mark Addy was probably the easiest casting we had, aside from Sean and Peter, we knew straight off we wanted. Mark came into audition, did his reading. We saw the first take he did, and that was it. There was no one else after that.
I remember thinking, I was like, oh, this is going to be easy. Everybody's just going to come in, they're going to nail it on the first try.
And people were surprised. In the book, the character is 6'6". He doesn't look quite like Addy, and Addy is, of course, known for his comic genius, not so much for playing roles like this. I think that's going to change now because he's shown he can do anything. But people were definitely surprised when we cast him, and I think now that they've seen what he can do, there's no longer much surprise.
Cat!
Your grace.
All this stuff here, I think, is pretty much, not yet, but he starts ad-libbing when he gets down the line with the smaller kids.
Well, it was funny. The first time through, it was ad-lib. And then we took his ad-libs and wrote them into the script because we liked his lines better than anything we could come up with.
Shut up.
Who have we here? It must be Rob. Aye, you're a pretty one. Your name is?
Arya.
Ooh, show us your muscles.
I started saying that to my son, show us your muscles.
You'll be a soldier.
No, my son's always showing me his muscles.
That's Jaime Lannister, the Queen's twin brother.
Would you please?
Our finest moment of script writing.
Yeah.
Brilliant. The ADR we added later too.
Brilliant, brilliant dialogue. Spent many days on those lines.
My queen.
Just for reasons that are clear to anyone who's seen the episode, it's essential that people know and understand the relationship between the Lannisters and understand that Jaime and Cersei are brother and sister, and we thought we would err on the side of hitting that nail on the head rather than have it be unclear as to who they were relative to each other.
I see him.
The first time we aired the original version of the pilot for some of our friends were very smart writers that we've known for a long time. We get to the final scene and they had no idea that Cersei and Jaime were brother and sister.
Like,
so
what?
We realized we had a problem.
Like,
in fact,
what?
In the words of one of our friends, a massive
so
problem.
What? I love that man.
Yeah, who is Craig Mazin? We'll give it a little shout out to Craig Mazin. You have a massive problem.
Screw you, Craig Mazin. All I wanted to do was crack skulls. Another one of our great locations. These crypts are, this is Shane's castle, right?
Yeah, in the basement of Shane's. There was a wine, like a wine cellar of some kind.
And then Gemma Jackson got her hands on it, had these statues made to fill the various niches, and it became the crypt.
Landing, not up here, where you're no damn use to anybody.
It became very, very close to my crypt. I don't know what it's like for George, but very close to the way I envisioned the crypt in the books. This is one of the very few scenes in the whole series that's actually shot on 35 for any of you camera geeks out there. Most of the series was shot on Alexa digital camera. This is one of the three or four scenes that survives from the original version of the pilot and was shot on 35. So if you look carefully, it's a bit grainier. You can tell the difference if you know it's there, but otherwise the Alexa worked out beautifully for us.
would have been bound by blood.
I would give a lecture on the Alexa, but I don't want to confuse anybody.
Yeah. Get into all the technical details, but
yeah.
Save that for the Rian Johnsons of the world.
Put that in the appendix.
I like how the horse hit its cue there so perfectly, just kind of hit out sideways so we could see its Lannister red saddle.
We wanted a good introduction to Tyrion. In the book, we have the benefit of learning all about him in exposition, whereas here we kind of just need to see who he is right out of the gate. So this is actually a scene that we invented to let us know who Tyrion is and what he's about.
Did you hear the kings in Winterfell?
I did hear something about that.
And the queen and her twin brother, they say that he is the most handsome man in the Seven Kingdoms.
And the other brother?
The queen has two brothers.
As David said, Peter was one of the two people we knew we absolutely needed to have, probably from the time we got to page 100 of the book.
I hear they call him the Imp.
I hear he hates that nickname.
Oh, I hear he's more than earned it.
One of the many impressive things that Esme Bianca does in the role of Roz is playing Roz, who's generally naked, and making her somehow seem warm, because whenever we're shooting, it's always about 42 degrees.
Yes.
That's Fahrenheit. I don't know what that works out to Celsius, but very cold. And so she has to be, you know, wrapped up immediately after we stop shooting. But Esme always fools you into thinking it's perfectly warm there.
Don't get up.
For this scene, she was just cast as... we thought this was going to be a one-off role. We thought she was going to be here to serve the purpose of the scene, and that would be it. We just thought she was so much fun to watch. She did such a great job that we found ourselves writing more scenes for her and more scenes, and she's actually become a relatively major character in season two.
Of many courses. I thought you might say that, but since we're short on time... Come on, girls.
Look closely. One of these Winterfell prostitutes turns out to also be one of Queen Cersei's handmaidens.
Mm-hmm. See you at sundown.
Close the door!
Continuity error, you might say.
No.
But no, it's
did that
all
on purpose.
A grand scheme.
She got promoted.
And no prize for whoever figures out the real reason. Statue of Lyanna, I thought, came out perfectly. This is an important emotional scene here. Robert looking at the image of the woman he loved, Ned's sister. And important that it looked right, you know, and with all this stuff, it's one of the great things about working on the series is working with people who are so talented. So the scene, I think about, it's Ramin's score and it's Gemma Jackson's set.
In my dreams, I kill him every night.
It's done, Your Grace. Targaryens are gone.
Not all of them.
Introduction to Daenerys, shot in Malta.
Daenerys!
Yeah, there might be some cannons firing in those ships, anachronistically, but maybe Illyrio has some sorcerer friends with access to...
I did not notice that until Harry Lloyd, who plays Viserys, pointed it out to me. He was walking back and forth in front of this painting, and he said, you know that there are guns on these ships and that there wouldn't have been guns on the ships.
You know, they're firing wildfire. That's the no prize.
We've been his guest for over a year.
Yeah.
He's never asked us for anything.
Well, Illyrio's no fool.
He knows. Amelia was another real find. She had just gotten out of drama school not long before we found her.
You still slouch.
It was just one of those things of seeing somebody's performance on a tiny little 2-inch square window on your computer and having them convey the things, especially the things that she conveys later on in the season where she really needs to step up to the plate and become a sort of a Joan of Arc figure. She really just did something that nobody else was capable of doing.
Also, she was the only actor who had to fly out to L.A. and walk down to the stage of a theater at the HBO headquarters in front of us and the people who run HBO and perform a scene with Harry Lloyd.
You don't want to wake the dragon.
And then immediately after, different actors came in and did the same scene with Harry, and it was, you know, our two finalists for the role. And I can't even imagine how insanely pressurized that must have been. I mean, I think she was 23 at the time, as Dan said, you know, just out of drama school, had done maybe one small role on Doctors before, and it made it look easy and just didn't look afraid at all.
We did make sure that right afterwards, before she got in the car and went back to the airport, that we ran in and told her that she had gotten the job, so she wouldn't have had to have the world's longest flight back to England.
It's too hot, my lady.
A little foreshadowing there.
Clever.
Not too hot. Yeah, very clever. I'm very impressed with whoever came up with that. This is the palace. I think it's the summer palace of the president of Malta.
Where is he?
Does the president of Malta have a palace?
The Dothraki are not known for their punctuality.
Anyway, it's where he lives. And he was kind enough to let us use it, though we were not allowed to go inside.
Frankie the Dothraki makes a nice move here to avoid hitting the tree.
Nice. So our introduction to...
In the books, you see Drogo first on foot at a party. We went to see him ride in hot, as it were. These are horse people. We want to really show the contrast between Illyrio and the merchants.
The rightful king of the Andals and the
kind
first
of
men.
Live relatively soft lives, and then the Dothraki who sneer at the merchants and live on the ride.
And can do, like, at least 40 pull-ups.
Yeah. Yeah, Momoa is stronger than hell.
He's a big, big person.
Khal Drogo has never been defeated. He's a savage, of course, but he's one of the finest.
You realize how strong he is when he's trying to snap your forearms after having had one too many scotches.
Come forward, my dear.
Very, very nice human being, though. He's a good man.
People ask sometimes about the violet eyes in the book, Daenerys' violet eyes. Originally, we had tried to do some of these shots with Daenerys in violet-colored lenses, and it ended up just really hurting the performance because actors obviously act through their eyes. I mean, it's a great part of how you convey emotion, and we were much less interested in getting the color exactly right as we were in getting her performance exactly right.
I like the way Harry ran down the stairs just there. It's one of my favorite little bits.
Yeah.
I was about to say how beautiful this vista is at the president's house, then I remembered that it's not actually
beautiful,
real.
Beautiful green screen.
The people drink secret toasts to your health. They cry out for their true king.
When will they be married?
Soon. The Dothraki never stay still for long.
Is it true they lie with their horses?
I wouldn't ask Khal Drogo.
One of the reasons why the role of Daenerys was so difficult to cast and why Emilia is so fantastic in the role is she starts as this cowed young girl who's been really brutalized by her brother her whole life, and as a result is timid and fearful, and you know, she's basically being sold off here. She's little more than a slave, and this is how she tries to protest it, ineffectually and meekly. And, of course, by the end of the season, she becomes, as Dan said before, a Joan of Arc figure, a warrior queen. So some of the actresses we saw were able to embody that warrior queen, and some could do the timid child.
I'd say in the early 20-something actor pool, the former is a lot easier than the latter. You found a lot of people who could do the frightened girl part of it, but once it got time to really project force and power and make themselves into someone you would want to follow, that was, it's just not something many young actresses are called upon to do.
Plus, she looks great in silver hair.
Yeah, that's another thing.
I couldn't even, sometimes I don't recognize Emilia when she shows up, you know, at a restaurant or something, and she's got her brown hair.
Do you think Joffrey will like me? What if he thinks I'm ugly?
Then he is the stupidest prince that ever lived.
It's one of the great things about working in the series is we have these characters that we've inherited from George that we love so much, and having the opportunity to write scenes for them that aren't in the books. In this one, for instance, we haven't spent much time at all with Sansa to this point. She's been on the receiving line, and we've seen glimpses of her.
You'd have to leave me.
But nothing really just with her and for her. So we wanted to get a better sense of who she is, her relationship to her mother, a little bit more about Catelyn as well, and kind of a good introduction to the feast. And she's wonderful. You know, people love Arya because Arya is such a spunky tomboy and Maisie's such a wonderful actress, and they love Isaac because Bran is so lovable. And because Sansa makes certain choices over the course of the season that people don't agree with, you know, I think she doesn't get as much credit as she deserves, because Sophie Turner is a phenomenal, phenomenal actress. And I think as the seasons go on, if we're lucky enough to have many more seasons, that will become increasingly clear to everybody. This scene's also a bit different than the way it plays out in the book, where originally Benjen, Jon Snow's uncle, sees him in the feast hall. And we had shot that version of it, and then we went back to redo it this way, just to give them a little bit more time alone and to show Benjen doesn't live there. He's rode down from the wall just for this, to make that more clear.
Just helped to separate Benjen out of the tumult of the feast and just let him have a moment where we really get to know who he is and what he's about.
Get to see Jon Snow working the sword.
Well, you're always welcome on the wall. No bastard was ever refused a seat there. So take me with you when you go back.
Light Joe Maul's cheekbones in the dark.
Ask him. I know he will. The wall isn't going.
Benjen's a real Stark. He's definitely got that lupine look.
Yeah, he looks like a wolf. Yeah, Joe is a great actor and a great guy.
We have no families. None of us will ever father sons.
I don't care about that.
I believe he's played Jesus in the past.
He has.
Joe Maul.
I think he plays Lincoln's father. I better get inside. Movie coming up.
Rescue your father from his guests. We'll talk later.
Here comes the introduction to Tyrion that was originally our first introduction to Tyrion.
Your uncle's in the Night's Watch.
What's she doing back there?
Preparing for a night with your family. I've always wanted to see the wall.
You're Tyrion Lannister. The Queen's brother?
My greatest accomplishment. And you, you're Ned Stark's bastard, aren't you? Did I offend you? Sorry.
I love Peter's performance in this scene.
You are the bastard, though.
One of the difficulties with a pilot, with any pilot, is introducing all the characters and trying to figure out a way to get them all in there in an hour, some kind of natural way, while you're telling your story.
Let me give you some advice.
Maybe even more difficult on a show like this, where it's high fantasy. You're not only introducing characters, you're introducing a world, because this is not the world we live in. It's quite similar in some ways and quite different in others. The seasons last for years. It's somewhat like medieval Europe, but there are aspects that are quite different, and people are able to communicate with trained ravens, so forth and so on. I think got like a solid B or so for the pilot. Yeah. Give us a solid B.
It was a difficult task to do in a way that felt like it moved along, but didn't move along so quickly that everyone just breezed by you, and you really only had 60-some-odd minutes.
You had a feast. It's like a bear in a trap.
Again, one of the original scenes, shot in 35.
Did you know him?
Of course I did. Just a lad. But he was tough, man. A true ranger.
One of the challenges of doing something like this also is just tying together all the pieces. And you see all these disparate characters in these places. And here in this scene, they're talking about the guys that we saw in the cold open, the rangers who died, and the one that Ned beheaded. And it's just trying to follow and track who is who to whom.
Talk of the walkers.
Gets very tricky.
My brother might be the next hand to the king.
And it's also, since you know it so well, it can be hard to know how it plays to someone who doesn't know it. So we did a bunch of sort of targeted screenings to people that we knew and trusted who weren't familiar with the world to see what they picked up and what they didn't, and we would adjust accordingly.
Is this your first time in the North, Will Grove?
That was one of the real benefits of being able to go back and do a lot of reshooting, was that we got to take a second chance and a second bite at the apple for some of the things that we'd done before that maybe weren't clear enough to people and retool them so they were.
This scene's a bit unusual in that half this side that you're looking at now with Sansa was shot in the original pilot. The shots of Cersei and Catelyn were shot a year later because Catelyn was recast as Michelle Farrelly. So,
meanwhile, in the interim, Sophie grew about 6 inches.
Exactly.
This Sophie looks about 5 years younger than the Sophie of the rest of the show.
In your dress, did you make it? Such a talent. You must make something for me. I hear we might share a grandchild someday.
I hear the same.
Your daughter will do well in the capital. Such a beauty shouldn't stay hidden up here forever.
There's Jane Poole. People say, where's Jane Poole? Mm-hmm. She's right there. Hi, Jane. We originally shot this and we were looking at it, editing it. We probably looked at the scene about 50 times and then it's converted to HD and we looked at it on a big screen. All of a sudden we realized there was a camera crew in the background, which we had somehow not seen for the first 3 months that we were editing it.
Over Jamie's shoulder in a lot of these shots, you could make out a guy in a North Face jacket looking at a monitor.
I was just very glad it wasn't me. But our friends in visual effects were able to paint them out.
Just want to fight a man for real. I don't want to know, I can know.
We wanted to have a couple of these confrontations, and there are very few moments in the book where Ned and Jamie actually are together until their big fight, which in our show happens at the end of episode 5. We wanted to kind of set that up, make it a little bit of a two Western gunslingers, so you know there's going to be a showdown at some point. You don't know when it's going to happen. You don't know who's going to win, but you know it's coming. So there's the confrontation here and another one early on in episode 3 where Jamie and Ned see each other in the throne room.
I like this shot a lot.
I'm a Northman.
Yeah, Alex Akerhoff did such a good job down south in the shooting episodes 1, 2, 9, and 10. We brought him back to direct an episode this season. Episode 3 of season 2 will be scripted by Brian Cogman and directed by Alex Akerhoff.
His wife's king.
I'll say, listen.
I think these guys did a really, really nice job of just
not taking my husband.
Feeling like a couple who'd been married for a long time in a happy marriage. A political marriage initially, but kind of settled into a real love match over the years. The chemistry between them feels very authentic to me.
Send him in.
But when she closes her eyes, she thinks of Brandon Stark.
Pardon, my lord, my lady.
So true.
A rider in the night. From your sister.
Now, in the book, there's a box with a false bottom, and that was the way we originally shot the scene, that Lewin comes in, the box had been left there, and it ended up taking about 45 seconds to get it all out there. And we had so much that we had to deal with in this episode, and we couldn't spend the time on it, so. People have asked, where is the box? And we did shoot it that way.
We have the box.
We have the box, and we shot it. So that can be a DVD extra at some point, I think.
Sell it. Help pay for season 2.
She's fled the capital. She says Jon Arryn was murdered by the Lannisters.
I like Ned's scars. It looks like he was attacked by a pack of eagles at some point. It's not a pack of eagles. What would you say?
A gaggle.
A gaggle? It's not a gaggle.
A murder.
A murder of crows attacked his chest.
Fought them off bravely.
It was the Raven Liberation Organization. Tired of being slaves to the Meisters.
This was another I liked. The angel. The angel's on the shoulder.
Yeah.
Shot.
But who's the angel and who's the devil?
That's why I said angels. It's not really a bad guy and good guy. They two equally valid opposing points of view.
Now you want Ned to take the job.
The king rode for a month to ask for Lord Stark's help.
This is just the kind of thing that Sean can do so well, something like this, where he's just...
He swore the king an oath, my lord.
...conveying turmoil without doing anything over the top or saying anything, just shots like this. You either are someone like Sean Bean or you're not.
Yeah, exactly. Conveying haunted is incredibly difficult.
It's funny when you're watching it on a monitor, sometimes it'll feel like he's not doing all that much, and then you see it put together and you realize that it's just in absolute control of what
he's
doing.
It's all behind the eyes.
Yeah. Here we are in Malta. Beautiful day.
I was back in Northern Ireland when you guys were shooting this scene, and
wish we could insert picture in picture the video I have on my iPhone of this all being blown into the sea by 70-mile-an-hour, 80-mile-an-hour gale force winds.
Apparently the biggest storm to hit Malta in, what, 20 years or something?
Amelia was showing me some pictures that she had taken. They went out there to do a rehearsal on this day when they should not have been out there. She showed me the pictures, and she's basically showing me it looked like something you'd see on the internet, like picture taken by a woman who was killed 30 seconds later by a tidal wave. Like, it was a picture of what looked like a tidal wave maybe 10 feet from the lens of the camera. And I was like, why were you taking this picture? You could have been swept out to sea.
I like the guy who shows up with a basket full of snakes. He's the greatest wedding guest.
I'm not sure what the thought behind that gift is.
Here, Khal Drogo, serpents.
That gift confuses me. I like it. I would enjoy it personally. I'm not sure what she's going to do with
Maybe
it.
Maybe Drogo is a snake stew connoisseur. Shot.
It's very hard to get that bag of guts to open up properly.
The blue paint on the Dothraki is Paul Englund's idea, our makeup guru, Oscar winner Paul Englund. We'd seen some of the work he'd done on The New World, I think the Terrence Malick movie The New World. Because in the books, the Dothraki seem to be a bit of a hybrid between the Mongol horde and some of the Native American tribes, we thought some of what Paul did in The New World might be appropriate here. And he came up with these concepts. So Drogo's blue kind of claw mark stripes there, all thanks to Paul's wizardry. Very happy to have Paul and our hair man Kev back for season two.
Very happy.
Are you from my country?
Sir Jorah Mormont. Our introduction to Jorah Mormont, Ian Glenn. For many
years. Ian's a guy who's a leading man who we got very lucky to get in this role and who we're writing more and more for just because he's so good. Just read book 5, Dance with Dragons. It was good to see so much Jorah material in there because Ian is phenomenal, whatever we throw at him. And sometimes, you know, we sometimes jokingly call him Jorah the Explorer because he's given the thankless role of having to explain everything to Daenerys, you know, this stranger in a strange land who's wandering through this land. And Jorah's been here before, and he's spent a lot of time with the Dothraki, so he knows their customs. So.
Every time I'm reading a book now, I kind of wish Ian was reading it to me. Guy has an excellent, excellent voice.
Dragon's Egg's another prop by...
Yeah, another Gavin prop.
Gavin, yeah.
We had a version of these in the pilot that looked like Christmas tree ornaments. They were very difficult, surprisingly difficult to get right. But Gemma, with Gavin's help, really, really created something. It was a fun prop, one of which we gave to George and Paris.
As their wedding gift.
As their wedding gift.
Yeah, Dan mentioned earlier that one of the luxuries of getting to reshoot much of the pilot was rectifying past errors, and that was one of the huge ones. The dragon eggs just weren't right, and Gemma went back and redesigned them and came up with what we thought was the perfect image. Note, there was not a silver horse available. We apologize, we looked high and low for silver horse in Malta.
Animal casting is not easy.
No.
She's beautiful.
You try to do right by what you put in the script, and you do end up making compromises.
Sajora, I don't know how to say thank you.
Incredibly hard to find a white raven, too.
It is proving very difficult to find a white raven. Just heads up, if you don't see a white raven, because we literally couldn't
it's
find one.
I thought we weren't looking for one. And yes, there are white raven images on Google, but
they're
all
don't
live in Northern Ireland.
They're all in the New World. Watch him just jump up into that saddle.
Yeah, for a guy who did not grow up riding horses, Jason really figured it out. He's part of it is that he's fearless.
He's just not afraid of anything. Yeah. Doesn't mind getting hurt.
He was telling us stories about getting thrown from his horse on Conan time after time, and luckily he's big enough he can withstand a few falls.
These were just a really great fun. This, you know, it's funny because the worlds ended up being so separate that the casts almost seem separate in some instances, especially here where they were all out in Malta, and they were just a really great bunch of people to spend time with. A fun group. You might not know it from this rape scene about to come up. They were really, really excellent, excellent vibe amongst the cast and crew.
Luckily, Jason and Amelia became very close, so I think it helped a lot with these scenes because this scene and another scene in episode 2, which is also brutal, essentially rape, I think Jason was able to make it a lot easier than it would have been otherwise for Amelia. And that said, she had to do it, and just incredibly brave performance.
I think it's the kind of thing where the better an actress you are, the harder it probably is. Because, you know, she seemed to me like she was really kind of going to the place she would go to.
Is no the only word that you know?
No.
This is not the way the scene ends in the book. In the book, it ends in a more, won't go into all the details, but it's a lot less brutal and a lot less rough. Both the actors were having trouble getting their heads to the place where they understood how the scene could make that sharp a turn. Actually, that ending was kind of workshopped, if you will, by us and Timmy and Jason and Amelia.
Then pick you for a hunter.
The greatest in the land. My spear never misses.
It's not hunting if you pay for it.
Another one of our scenes on 35. You can really see how someone like Alfie Allen grew in the year since this was shot.
I'm still better than you.
Once he knew his shirt was going to be off, he started working out a lot.
I only ask you because I need you. You're a loyal friend.
There's supposed to be a pack of hounds in the scene because they're going hunting. And we had them there, and we started shooting, and the hounds panicked the horses, and we couldn't get the horses to stand still, so... Sadly, we had to get rid of the hounds.
Makes you wonder how anybody ever actually went hunting.
Come on, boys, let's go kill some. I love that shot of Bran looking back there at his father. The last time they'll see each other.
Wanted to make him. Tiny moment out of that because it will be the last time they see each other.
Come on.
Now we come to the end.
So we come to the end. I like what Ramin did in the score here, the way he really refused to foreshadow what was coming. I mean, this is carefree and fun for Bran, and the score really underscores that instead of underscoring the nature of what's about to transpire.
Luckily for Bran, Winterfell is famous for its natural handholds in the walls.
Yeah, the natural climbing walls built by the 8,000 years ago.
What's this?
What's all this then? You have to be very careful because Isaac's not allowed to actually look at any of this stuff.
J. Jaime Lannister, famous for killing the king and for perfecting the fully clothed.
Yes.
Sex.
Act.
Act. Thank you, God.
Stop.
Are you completely mad?
He saw us.
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. It's all right.
He saw us.
I heard you the first time. Quite the little climb, aren't you?
How old are you, boy?
The decision on how to do this last shot, or what the last shot should be, was something that we went back to time and again. We probably had five different versions of the last shot before we got the one that we liked.
The things I do for love.
So originally, he pushed him out, and we cut back to Cersei, who looks upset. That didn't quite work.
There was a fancier version that we had wanted to do where we went out the window. The
camera goes out the window and follows
that was down, right? That was a little too fancy.
It was indeed. And finally, we ended up with this one, which was shot with our stunt woman.
Yes.
In for Bran, falling from a crane right towards the camera. The camera's just off center. Thought it worked really well.
I like it. I think it works well. That's about it for us, I think.
That's it. Well, this has been a lot of fun, Dan. Thanks for joining me in this.
You're very welcome.
Strange journey.
You're very welcome.
David Benioff.
Right back at you. This is Dan Weiss.
Saying goodbye. Hope you enjoy the other episodes.
Yes, enjoy the show.